Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, joined by Green Eggs and Hamilton. That'd be Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Do you notice how I kind of weave that in? You could Andy Hamilton. It all had the same letters.
It's not your best work.
That's all right. I mean, there's so many of these that I got to get to.
I suppose.
You have to just interject some really
It's fresh
ones.
Every week, right? Yeah. Makes you appreciate the good ones.
Yeah, it does. I mean, just because there's the dud in there from time to time, you got to just throw a few clunkers in it every now and then. So you seem to be enjoying it more as you think about it, how good that was.
Yeah. I thought, what was it, last week's or 2 weeks ago with the, you know, the access point credential board.
Oh, gee. I mean, I'm still buzzing about that. It's outside our studio here on your office wall. I find myself staring at it.
It's mesmerizing.
It is. I mean, think about it. You have a access chart for every single credential known to mankind. You are the UWW president, vice president, every single one. There's a grid out here at 25. That is epic.
What if I printed off a credential that said UWW president? Where do you think that could get me in life? Anywhere? You think?
Jail, maybe.
Maybe
jail.
Maybe.
Depending on what the tournament is. But I love
Flash
that.
Flash that when you're trying to get into a parking lot that you don't have a credential for and see if that gets you anywhere.
I want that for our newly renovated museum. I want that somewhere on display and have an explanation of where this came from, being the World Cup and how that came about. I just think it's that good.
So really?
If it gets stolen, it's me. I'm just telling you straight up. If it gets stolen, it is me. But our talking point for today is something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, and that's the promotion of wrestling and how it pertains to how we grow the sport. We have our fanatics, and we know those people, whether it's me or you or Jason Bryant or Shane Sparks. We talk at a level of really intricate detail about guys, and it's high-level stuff, and that's fun when you have that. How do we get those people that aren't even thinking about wrestling on the radar? And this comes about by seeing ESPN, a lack of real understanding of what the sport is. You'll get an occasional ESPN will show just unbelievable coverage for the NCAA championships. NBCSN just had the World Cup, and they've done some great things recently with having some great wrestling coverage. But how do we get the mainstream to really embrace it and then get it to the next level where you actually get some of those basketball fans who know nothing about wrestling into the fold?
It's a good question. I think there have been some positive steps that have occurred here in the last 5 years or so. I think look at, from a freestyle standpoint, certainly a lot more entertaining right now, right? I mean, with the rule changes that went down in 2013, freestyle's in a really good place as far as action entertainment. You need superstars, you know, that, the mainstream can connect with. And I think we have some of those. Jordan Burroughs, certainly has been as good as you could draw it up, right? I mean, you know, the guy wins. That's first and foremost. He's charismatic. He's articulate. He connects with people. We interviewed him on the show, you know, several weeks back, and you know, we thought we were going to get out of there in 5 to 10 minutes, and you know, we were there for 25. And so I think we need more people like that. And I think we have some people that can bridge that gap after his competitive career ends, whenever that might be. Look at all the young superstars that are coming up in the sport. You know, obviously Kyle Snyder and what he's done and winning the Sullivan Award. Then even on down the line, we've talked about the developmental chain in the United States and, you know, all the young phenoms that are on the way, Spencer Lee, Yanni Diakamahalos. You think about what Spencer did in this state. So many people that are non-wrestling fans were connecting to Spencer Lee and what he did throughout his freshman season at Iowa. Yanni has the personality that can become a champion who transcends those boundaries and steps outside the wrestling world just because of his personality and how colorful he is. So I think there are things like that that are occurring now that are good. I think from a college standpoint, we've made steps that have increased the action in the sport, but I'm not sure they've necessarily been steps from a rule standpoint that have made it easier for somebody to just flip through the channels, turn on wrestling, and totally understand what's going on. I think freestyle has simplified things and it's made it easier to follow. I think college has made, you know, the college rules have become more complex and even confusing for some college wrestling fans. I would like to see the rules maybe go the other way in terms of simplicity. Just thinking about like one off the top of my head, action rule on the edge, where I don't even think wrestling fans sometimes understand why, you know, it's called the way it's called on the edge. And there's not a lot of consistency at times. So I think that could be cleaned up. I think, you know, just trying to align the freestyle rules and folk style rules a little bit more and just, you know, straight up push out, I think would be better. But, long-winded answer. But I think there are some other things we can do from a marketing standpoint too.
So let's flip this. Let's just say there's a lacrosse podcast out there and they're having the same conversation. They're saying, how do we get fans engaged? We have a great product. It's entertaining, but nobody knows about us. So I would say with you, you're an expert in wrestling and baseball. You're locked in on those. You know the intricacies. How do we get Andy Hamilton to become a lacrosse fan? And I think that's the question we have to ask here is how do we get wrestling fans a better product, but then give non-wrestling fans or those that might be in the fold, how do we get them to appreciate the sport at an even higher level?
Well, I think connecting with the personalities, that's one. Getting Jordan Burroughs on as many televisions or radios or whatever, showcasing not just his talents, but also who he is as a person and his story. I mean, a guy that doesn't win a high school state title until his senior year, winds up with more World and Olympic titles than high school and NCAA titles, goes 16-13 his freshman year. So it's not like he has been a guy that's won his entire life. I think that's a great story for athletes and people in all walks of life. I think that's one way. I think, another is just, you know, like I said, how we market the sport. You know, I think back to my time at the Des Moines Register and covering auto racing and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't an auto racing fan until they put me in that job. And I think about how like NASCAR and IndyCar would market their superstars and they would make it, I can't think of how many times during those 5 years that I covered auto racing that I wound up writing a story about someone I had no intention of writing about until their PR rep said, hey, we're going to come by, you know, come through Des Moines prior to the races at Iowa Speedway. We're going to come through. We're bringing our driver into your newsroom or we're coming through Des Moines. Is there a time on our media tour when we can stop by the Register to talk? I think about 1 year, Dario Franchitti won the Indy 500 and I get a call the very next day from an IndyCar rep who says, hey, we got Dario here. We know that, the race at Iowa Speedway is coming up in a month. Do you have some time? Would you like to talk to him? I'm like, yeah, I'd like to talk to him. We just won the Indy 500 yesterday. So
yeah, of course.
So yeah, absolutely. So it's a point I'm trying to make is like they made it so I couldn't say no to writing a story about Dario or, you know, even I look at the NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Series now and the young phenoms in the sport, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, just to name three, Austin Dillon. those are guys that, their PR reps said, hey, we're coming through town. Do you want to, talk to our, driver? And so I got a chance to, sit down with those guys for each of them at times for probably a half hour and spend a lot of time with them, knowing that like their career was going to take off and there was going to be a time at, later on where I thought, man, it's going to be pretty cool to look back and say, I interviewed Chase Elliott, here or Kyle Larson there. And so, so I think that, we can do a little bit of a better job as a sport with, maybe getting out and being proactive and telling these stories, getting these athletes in front of more television cameras, in front of more reporters who aren't necessarily coming around on a regular basis and covering wrestling. I think we can be a little more proactive there.
So it sounds like simply it's effort. It's saying we're going to bring the product to you. And so would that entail Kyle Snyder and Jordan Burroughs going on a tour of the United States and doing what you just said? Would that be a solution?
I mean, maybe not a tour of the United States, but maybe a smaller tour. I think Final X is interesting to me, and it's going to be compelling to see how this shakes out, how popular it is, because we're taking wrestling to places where it's popular and where they have local heroes. And but I do think, when we get closer to the Olympics, yeah, I mean, can we do that? Can we get them in front of more people that they normally wouldn't connect with, that are outside the wrestling realm? Yeah, that to me, I think is how we grow the sport of international wrestling. Because right now, it's kind of baffling to me that, the higher you go on the ladder in wrestling, the smaller your following gets. And I can't think of another sport that it's like that, where, yeah. Take the World Cup, for example. We had 7,000 people in Carver Hawkeye Arena, and that was a good World Cup crowd. But Iowa averaged, I think, 8,900 for home attendance, in the college season. And there was, you go down to the state tournament in Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, and there will be 16,000 people in there for the state final. So it's like the state football championships are down the road in the Uni Dome. And, it would be like those outdrawing the Super Bowl, or like doubling the crowd of the Super Bowl. It's something that I haven't been able to put my finger on why we don't draw better than we do for international wrestling. Even like the US Open coming up this weekend, what will the attendance be? Will it be 2,000-3,000 out there, maybe in Vegas? I think of years where I would flip on the Open and there might be like 800 people in attendance there. So How do we increase that number? What do you think, Kyle?
Well, I think what you just said there's a variety of things. I think number one, it's connectability. So as it relates to the World Cup, number one is I don't think local fans probably understand it that well. And there's not that connection that you're talking about. So if you're a New York Yankees fan and there's one player that happens to be on an exhibition coming to Iowa, is that enough to get you there? You're a Yankees fan. That's what you want to be a part of. They had one slice of one era, and that was Thomas Gilman. And so do the local wrestling fans rally behind that? Maybe, maybe not. They did. I think it was a good crowd. But I think there's just a lack of understanding when you talk to some of the just lay people that like the local program and like to go to get a hot dog at an Iowa meet and see them kick butt. I don't know that you can make them understand what the World Cup is. So I think there's a disconnect there with what that means. The other thing, too, I think these parents have dreams of their kids being an Olympic champion, but I'm not sure they could tell you who an Olympic champion is. I don't know that they really understand the sport, and that's kind of scary that I don't think they know. Like A-Rod, I can just throw out names in baseball, and I don't even really follow it that close. I know who they are, but I don't think that wrestling parents, when they come in the museum, a lot of times that they know exactly who they might be. And I think that's the disconnect there. There's a huge, huge gap. And you're right. The parents at that youth level, they are fanatics. They'll take their kids anywhere. But where that disconnect happens, I think somewhere along the line, it does. We're privileged in Iowa. I was going to bring this up. Man, before Spencer Lee had even wrestled a match or even had a practice in this past summer, there were people coming up. There was an autograph line for Spencer Lee as a true freshman. How do we get to that point where we really market these guys as stars? And I think what you just said about the NASCAR is brilliant. That's what we have to do. We have to go out and say, you want to have this as a storyline and tell them why. And then people take notice.
Oh, yeah. You make it where they can't say no, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like, yeah, I'm going to write about Chase Elliott. I'm going to write about Kyle Larson because they're, you know, right here sitting across the table from me. And I don't even have to leave my newsroom to do it.
That's the hook there. And I just think it goes back to effort, Andy. I just think what you said there with NASCAR is absolutely brilliant because they took the effort. They said, we're going to actually lay this on your plate and we're going to give this to you. And here's why you want to do it. And look what, now you're a NASCAR fan and you know something about it. So as we have Becca Leathers coming up in the program today, here's someone who is very marketable in my mind. She is a world bronze medalist at the 2017 World Championships in Paris. How do we get to the point where she gets on that pedestal that she deserves? Choctaw, Oklahoma knows about her, but how do we make sure that she's a national storyline?
It's a good question. I think, you know, we lose maybe a little something in women's wrestling right now because college level isn't as visible as the men's. And so there's that gap, right? I mean, there's not the chance to build her up like there is Yanni Diakmihalis and Spencer Lee, because they're competing on national television repeatedly throughout their college season. They're winning NCAA titles, in front of millions of fans watching, while they're competing at the NCAA championships and following their season throughout. That's another thing too, with international wrestling, the lack of a solid set schedule, I think hurts a little bit in the following.
That's a good point.
Building an audience. And also, one of the things that David Mercatani likes to talk about on our weighing in podcast on track wrestling is people follow the laundry. They root for the laundry, right? And that's one thing that maybe we lack a little bit in the international scene. If we could get to the point where we have a freestyle season in the United States, maybe a club circuit, where you're rooting for the Ohio Regional Training Center or the Hawkeye Wrestling Club or whatever it may be, that there's that local connectability, I think would be big. But to answer your question, about Becca, I think we're making steps in the United States in making the women wrestlers bigger names. And they're doing it by going out and winning, right? I mean, she's become more of a household name in wrestling just because she won a world bronze medal last year. But that being said, I think it's going to take some time and in building up women's college wrestling and getting more of a following for that. That will be helpful. I think we'll sit here in 10 or 15 years and look back and wonder why maybe she wasn't a bigger name in that era, in this era, but compared to wrestlers of 10 or 15 years from now, just because of where we're heading with women's wrestling. I think more numbers.
I think you nailed it, though. It's access, because that's the overriding point here. When you are living somewhere and you have access to these stars all of the time, you have outlets that you can go see them. World Cup, this is the first time it's been in Iowa City. It was in California for a while. But tell you what, I'm not going to California likely to watch the World Cup. I know you have a different situation where you get a chance to go and cover these events, but it's all about access and what you're close to.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we need to, we need to be smart about where we place events and where on the map, where on the calendar. The people that went to the World Cup, and we talked about this a couple of weeks back, the people that went to the World Cup were, I think, highly entertained. They loved it. So it's how do we reach the, if there were 7,000 people there, how do we reach the other 8,500 people that weren't there to fill up the arena?
That is the question. And I think part of it too with access is not only what's in front of you in a physical sense, but it's access on television. And I think that's an important element here is it's the repetition. You want to see it over and over and over again so that you don't see Jordan Burroughs one day at the Olympics every 4 years. You see him maybe five times a year, six times a year, and then you start taking notice a little bit, and then you start becoming a fan because he's a cool dude. Kyle Sayers is a cool dude. All these guys, they have great stories. They have compelling reasons to follow them. We just need to get it more and more and more. And if we can get you to be a NASCAR fan, there's no reason we can't get other people to be a wrestling fan.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I used to go round and round about with my brother-in-law about, you know, NASCAR. He's like, oh, NASCAR is a sport. And I'd be like, come on. But I've come around on it. You know, and I think probably the reason I did is just because of the personalities in it, getting to know the drivers up close and their stories and just being able to sit down and have a normal conversation with them. It's funny. I think that there are some parallels between the drivers in NASCAR and the wrestlers, the top level wrestlers, just personality wise. And I think you got to have a few screws loose maybe to get behind the wheel and yeah. Talladega going 205 mile per hour in a pack. I think you also have to have some screws loose maybe a little bit to put yourself through what you have to put yourself through to be an elite wrestler. And that's good, though. I tell you what, I love following both sports and certainly, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else but covering wrestling nonstop year round. But it's a fascinating conversation too. I mean, because, you know, we're sitting here wondering, like, we love wrestling and you and me, our wrestling careers, didn't go all that far. We fell in love with other sports. Probably our first love were other sports. You, as a runner, me as, you know, a baseball player. And, yet here we are, this is our livelihood and, you know, what got us hooked? You know, what got you hooked, Kyle?
It was just the kind of that romance of it, that it's one-on-one and you just saw, especially at the high school level, that these guys are competing at such a high level and that they're doing things that kind of almost seem impossible and they were larger than life. And it's, again, it goes back to the access. I think that's why you got into wrestling over football, is that you have access to these guys and they'll tell you their story.
Yeah.
It's a different type of feel when you're around wrestlers. And I'm always amazed by that. You see Mark Perry in the stands. You're like, this is Mark Perry. You're still kind of enamored by him, but you can go up and you can talk to the guy and he's going to give you a conversation. He's going to give you content. It's going to be great content.
Yeah.
It's always fascinated me that you have the insight with these guys and they're willing to give it to you and you get to rub shoulders with the best. I love it.
Yeah. Gable. I mean, think about how many autographs that guy signed in his lifetime. Global wrestling icon and so approachable, so accessible to us. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Our guest today, Becca Leathers, returning world medalist. She got a bronze medal at the 2017 World Championships, also a 2015 junior world bronze medalist. She won the Women's National Collegiate Championship in 2016. How are you, Becca?
Doing well. Happy to be on.
Great to have you on. I think anytime we talk to someone who is a female wrestler, it's always important to just establish where they got their start, since this is kind of still in its infancy and we're trying to break down some walls on how we view women's wrestling. How did you get your start?
So I grew up in Oklahoma. I grew up wrestling on an all-men's wrestling team, and I started wrestling in fifth grade with a bunch of support. I mean, it was definitely a taboo thing for me to be wrestling on a men's team in Oklahoma growing up, but where I grew up and with the parents I have, I was really lucky to have the support and the opportunities with the coaches I did, who were just awesome coaches. Now they like just won every single state title as a team, as a high school team in Choctaw. And so I came from a pretty prestigious program, and I think that did a lot to raise my expectations for what I should expect from wrestling. But grew up in Oklahoma and wrestled there in college and for my first year, and it was just a great start.
What kind of family did you have?
Very traditional Midwestern family, parents who loved each other. I have an older brother, family of four, middle class, about as about as average as it comes.
Your brother wrestle?
He wrestled, yeah, but he didn't ever really take it too competitive. He wrestled in school as more of an extracurricular than trying to make teams and wrestle nationally. And both of my parents were never even athletes growing up. So it was kind of crazy that this brute sport is what I would call home.
Based on what you're saying, it sounds like you had a pretty seamless transition into the sport. Were there some struggles you had to overcome being a female in a predominantly male-dominated sport?
Well, like I said, I grew up in a really great community. I have to give a lot of credit to my middle school coach, Darren Higgins. Any kind of backfire that may have come my way, he did a really great job of deflecting. He made sure that I knew that I was meant to be on the mat 100% of the time. So any adversity was really kind of sheltered from me by the coaching staff that surrounded me.
Becca, when this gets started for you, you know, there wasn't somebody like Helen going off and winning, you know, Olympic gold. Where did you think wrestling could take you? What were your goals? What were your visions? Who were people that you looked up to in the sport?
Well, growing up in Oklahoma, of course, John Smith was always someone I watched and looked at and saw his team and was a big Cowboy wrestling supporter. I loved Dan Gable growing up. He was one of my idols. I just loved his mentalities and everything. But for my expectations for myself, you know, I my sophomore year of high school, I was ready to quit wrestling and I went to Body Bar in Florida because it was in Florida. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I'll go to this tournament and I'll wrestle and then I'll get to play on the beach for a little bit. And then that'll be fun. And then I ended up winning it. And at that point they were like, okay, cool. Now you're on the cadet world team. We're going to take you around the world and we're going to take you to the Olympic Training Center. And then that was really when all the doors opened for me. And when I saw the opportunity with the sport to travel and get exposure to elite mindsets. And that's really the turning point for me was my sophomore year at Body Bar.
Why were you considering quitting wrestling at that point?
Man, I couldn't even tell you now. I fell madly back in love with the sport. Once I got up to the Olympic Training Center and exposed to all that, it was just hard. I think wrestling on a men's team, and I was on the lineup and I won more matches than I lost, but it was just a battle and it was taboo. And I think as a 15, 16 year old girl, it started weighing on me. And so that motivation from seeing how the women's wrestling had all these opportunities kind of changed my view there.
You're 21 years old and you're talking about all these experiences that a lot of people never get a chance to have. Do you feel like having all these experiences helps you grow up quicker?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at 21 years old, I've already lived in Colorado Springs. I live in Washington now and I'm headed to Texas from here. And so in that short amount of time, I've absolutely had to grow up and get exposed to a lot of things, and especially traveling the world and being gone and having to make it work and really learn how to deal with people and my own situation, which is a little bit different than the norm.
You mentioned that John Smith was one of your idols. He was in your corner last year when you won the bronze in Paris. How surreal is that when you think back to your journey in the sport?
Oh, man, that was just amazing. Having him and Kerry Collat as part of the staff for a world team, that was like a dream come true for me because they just raised the level of intensity when they enter a room. And so it was so surreal and it just motivated me, really.
What did you learn? What was the greatest lesson you took away from your time working with John Smith?
Ooh, greatest lesson. The answer is always work harder.
I like it. Did he show you the low single? Did he work with you on that?
He didn't work with me on the low single. That's not real. That's more of an Allie Reagan move.
Yeah.
But I learned his low single technique by going up and working out in that wrestling room a couple times a week in high school. And that was always fun, learning that low single.
I'm interested in your journey. You were a 2016 WCWA national champion for Oklahoma City, but now you are in Grays Harbor Community College, as you mentioned, in Washington. Take us through what that journey looks like, why you're out there, and what that process looks for you now that you're going to Texas, which we just learned here. Why kind of the traveling around? What happened there?
So after my freshman year of college was always in my view. So I grew up always knowing that that was where I was going to go, is I need to go to college and get an education. And that's the path, you know. And so I went in my freshman year at OCU and was at university there, won a national title there. And then my coach got fired, Archie Randall. And the program changed, and I wasn't really comfortable with the program anymore. So I moved up to the Olympic Training Center and was there for a year. And I just didn't feel fulfilled and balanced when I was living there. I really, really missed going to school. I felt like it was something that was just holding me back as a person, the fact that I wasn't in school. I really enjoy school. And so this year, I guess over the new year, I just decided that I'm going back to school, and I reached out to the coach, Andy Cook, and got it going. Came up here within the next week and got enrolled in school and got the ball rolling again. And so moving to Texas, that's where Andy Cook is going. He's got a job at Wayland Baptist, so I'll be wrestling for Wayland Baptist next year.
So you'll have another year of eligibility?
Yeah. I think the eligibility is very confusing to me with the world medals and everything, because I still technically have 3 years of eligibility for college wrestling. But if I go win a world title, I think that takes one away.
Really?
So that might get a little, yeah, I think that messes up my eligibility within the WCWA, so.
So with the WCWA,
I'm not exactly sure.
Do you want to take that as far as you can, as much eligibility as they'll give you? Will you take it?
Yeah, that's the plan at this point.
So you want to win a couple more?
Of course.
Yep. Okay, so with where you are right now, you won the U23 World Team Trials, and you're going for a World Championship team. It looks like you just want to compete in as much as possible at this point in 2018.
Yeah, I've missed the mat a lot since I had shoulder surgery after the World Championships, and I've been missing it. And I watched the college women's national championship this year, and I watched how Kayla Miracle like really got to work and be successful in a lot of different areas. And I was like, I want that mat time. I want that experience. I want to be able to go onto a college mat and get the muscle memory that I'm going to need whenever I step on a senior level mat.
Where do you fall on the spectrum of your level of competitiveness? There's some people that are hyper competitive. They don't want to talk to their opponents. Some people like to interact. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Oh man, I just like wrestling. It's fun. As far as with my competitors, women's wrestling is so small and it's so tight knit that it doesn't make sense to have enemies within this circle. So I'm not hyper competitive. I think that everyone's working hard and the best wrestler wins.
What were the greatest takeaways for you from the Women's World Cup, getting back out there competing again, and also, the training camp that came after it over there?
So I didn't get to stay for the training camp, okay, which was devastating because that just looked like it was one of the best camps I could have gone to. I actually had to leave the day after we competed to come back and get ready for the U23 World Team Trials. But leaving the World Cup, I was a little bit upset. I lacked a little bit of motivation. And then the tournament at U23 has really just helped me find my motivation and realize that I can combine like my talent with hard work, and that I am talented, because I went into the tournament unmotivated and still did really well. And then my takeaway was that I just I'm capable. And it really motivated me and inspired me from that point.
Why do you think that males sometimes are so resistant to having women's wrestling?
Say that again?
Why are males sometimes so resistant to female wrestling? I mean, I've seen it as such a great plus for the sport, but sometimes there's a little bit of resentment. Do you feel that at all? Why do you think that is?
I think people just hate change. I think that people are worried about the attention being taken away from themselves sometimes. And that change, and it's such a wholesome sport, and it takes such great strength, speed, skill, and, you know, the stigma of that women can't do it. And I think that really holds a lot of minds back. And so it's really great to be a part of the women's wrestling movement that shows that we can and we will and we are.
Do you get comments from just bystanders when you say I wrestle? What kind of comments do you get?
Really, it's changed within the last couple of years. It used to be a big shock, and now it's becoming, especially in the state of Washington, it's mainstream. I mean, Washington has one of the largest concentrations of high school women's wrestling. And so up here, it's not as taboo as it might be back home, but I don't get too many negative comments anymore. And most people are just excited and think it's awesome and want to hear more about it.
Do you remember where you were when the announcement came in 2013 when wrestling got saved in the Olympics?
Oh, man, that was huge. We rallied for at the state capitol. We signed petitions and did all kinds of stuff to, you know, keep Olympic wrestling. That was just awesome. I don't remember where I was. I was on a trip and we were all waiting around. I guess it was a wrestling trip because I'm thinking I had to have been around wrestlers. We were just waiting for that announcement. And when it was saved, it was just a big party.
Going back to last year, you know, with the shoulder issue that you dealt with, how long were you dealing with that? How much did that maybe restrict you in training and your competition in Paris? And what was that process like getting back on the mat?
Well, I actually hurt my shoulder the very last day of training camp before we left for Montpellier for our acclimation camp in Paris or in France, Montpellier, France. And, you know, I was actually wrestling Sammy Henson's son, and he was about to push me out, and I whipped him to his back out of bounds, and just something pulled in my shoulder, and I just started rubbing it, and it was like, something's not right here. And so we just, from that point on, didn't do an MRI or anything, just hit rehab hard as we could for the next couple of days, and trying to get it as strong as possible, because at that point I was ready to wrestle at the world championships. Someone could rip my arm off and I was going to wrestle at the world championships. And so we just did a lot of rehab and mental training. And when I got to the world championships, the day I wrestled, it didn't hurt. I didn't feel it. I didn't think about it. And so because of that, when I got home, I didn't even think anything was wrong with it, really. So, but my coaches and my parents are like, you should get the MRI. So I go and I get it. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Your bicep tendon is shredded. We have to do surgery. And so I had rehabbed myself to I had convinced myself completely that nothing was wrong with it. And I think that's a huge part of, I think that helped a lot going into the world championships, was the fact that I didn't think anything was wrong with it. And that even if it was, that it didn't matter.
So this week with U.S. Open coming up, I mean, you're sitting in a good spot in, with the sit out to Final X. What will be your approach to the U.S. Open? I mean, are you going to be in Vegas watching? Are you, what will go into scouting for you from that tournament?
Yeah, I will absolutely be in Vegas scouting. I think I'm really excited to be sitting at the Final X. I think it's a really cool perk of that world medal. I really just want to go and watch and figure out tendencies. That's what I do when I watch film mostly, is I figure out tendencies. Because I can't look at someone and say, oh, I cannot get high crotch, or I can't get double legged, because that that takes away from my own offense. I just have to know they're going to wrestle past the whistle or they're going to put hands in my face. I need to be aware of the things that are maybe that could maybe throw my game when it comes to match time. And so I'm excited to go watch them duke it out and be able to sit on the sidelines knowing that they have to come all that way just to get to me.
When you got your bronze medal at the 2017 World Championships, from that time you left the mat to the first time you saw your cell phone, how many text messages did you have of congratulations?
Oh, man, Twitter was blowing up. Everyone was on Twitter. That was so cool. It shows you how many people are there and love and support you. It was awesome.
So did you get back to everyone on your phone? Was that hard to get through?
Oh, I did my best. Did if I left anyone out, I'm sorry, but I did my best.
But social media is such a great trend, a great way to get your brand out and stay connected. How have you used Twitter and social media to your benefit?
I wish I was better at using social media for my benefit. Adeline Gray has told me numerous times, get a website, get this, get a fan page going, do these things, spread your message. And I am just, I think that originally it was, I don't need to do all that, but Adeline really has influenced me and pushed me and I need to do a better job still, but it really helps, to grow your own following, you know, to fundraise, to show support and to get those good feelings whenever you do win, you know, and to know that these people do support you. But I do need to do a better job at that.
What was the reception like back in Choctaw after you came home with a world bronze? What was the coolest thing that happened back home after that?
The coolest thing that happened was I was the grand marshal of the homecoming parade in our hometown. So I got to sit in the front car and wave and smile at all the kids and throw candy. And that was just a blast. My ultimate goal is, this is what I told our mayor. I was like, I want my name on the water tower. So he was like, go get a world title and we'll put your name on the water tower. So that's the plan.
So is it a world title? What if you get win the Olympics? Does that count too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I want a statue.
That's right. You probably would get a statue for that. That'd be pretty cool. Now, Terry Steiner, here's a guy who's been with the women's program for a long time as the national team coach. I like him. I know Andy likes him a lot, but you get a chance to deal with him on a not daily basis, but in a huge capacity. What's he like to work with?
He's great. You know, he cares a lot about the women's program. And we had a long layover one time coming back from Spain. And he kind of told me his story. And he's a quiet guy, but when he talks about women's wrestling and he talks about how much it's grown, you can just see how much passion he has for women's wrestling and how much he loves it and wants it to grow. And I really enjoy working with him.
What's the response you get from female wrestlers that may see you as someone they look up to?
I'm sorry?
Well, went back to Adeline Gray. So she had said that in the past that she'll get young female wrestlers come up to her and say, wow, you really exist. Hey, have you had stories like that where young female wrestlers have articulated to you what you mean to their career?
Yeah, I actually just did a clinic this past Saturday, and it really just shows you, it's really motivating whenever a young girl comes up to you and they say, I've watched you wrestling, and it was awesome, and I want to wrestle like you. You know, that just motivates me to work harder and to keep winning and to give them someone to look up to, because that's what they need. You know, women's wrestling, it does get a lot of, it gets put down a lot sometimes by other factors, and so it's really inspiring to me when a young wrestler comes up to me and lets me know that I'm a beacon for them.
Has Helen Maroulis opened the floodgates a little bit and really let us see what women's wrestling can be?
Helen's awesome, man. She has taken women's wrestling to the next level. If you watch her performance at the World Championships, the teching everybody, throughout the tournament. I mean, she is the best wrestler in the world. She's changing the game, and that's my goal, is to change the game of wrestling. So she's absolutely opened the floodgates of the potential of this sport.
Have you talked to some of the early pioneers, the Trisha Saunders of the world?
Oh, I adore Trisha Saunders. Of course I've talked to them. They're a wealth of knowledge, and they have a really great perspective because they've seen the growth and they can see the progression a lot better than someone in the thick of it. And so I absolutely take everything I can from those like Trisha Saunders.
Isn't that crazy? If they told you the stories about the early days of the world championships and how they viewed it and how they were given, I think, cooking gear and cooking utensils in those early days and the most beautiful wrestler instead of the outstanding wrestler. I mean, isn't that crazy to think about in hindsight?
That is just wild to me. I'm so glad those days are over.
I mean, it boggles the mind to think about how far we've come. And as we think about what we can do in the future, do you think we're going to get close to being an NCAA championship sanctioned sport for women's wrestling in the next 20 years?
Absolutely. I think within the end of my own career, I think we're going to have D1 college programs opening. I think it's a Presbyterian school. Former coach of OU.
Yeah, Mark Cody on Presbyterian. Yep.
Yeah. Mark Cody. He just got a coaching position at a school that said that a D1 school that was said to have both men and open it, was said to be opening both a men and women's program. So I think that by the time I retire, I want to move into a coaching job, and D1's the way to go.
So you're in this for the long haul. It sounds like you're lifelong wrestling.
If there's anything I love more than wrestling, it's coaching wrestling. So, yeah, I'm in it.
Let's rewind a second. You know, when we talked about you maybe wanting to get out when you were a sophomore in high school, what was the life plan at that point for you?
Well, my dream from the time I was young was to be an astronaut. And when I was in high school, I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy and then go become a pilot and then a fighter pilot and then a test pilot and then become an astronaut. So when I was in high school, I was in all kinds of extracurriculars and really pushing the grades. And that was really my plan at that time, is I was just going to make that my focus. And then the wrestling took off and the Olympic dream became something. And it kind of changed my life path at that point.
When you get into wrestling, especially with a male dominated sport, do you feel like it changes your friendship group in high school?
I had a really awesome group of girlfriends in high school. We all did different things. One was a volleyball player. One was a singer. One was on like the academic team, and I was a wrestler. So we were pretty tight knit all the way through. It didn't really change things for me in that way. It just expanded my friend group into having my two best friends on the men's wrestling team and just having like a really good balance of both lives.
Going back to today and your health, do you feel like you're on pace for Final X and getting to that point? Are you 100% healthy right now?
Yeah, I've been battling some other injuries, you know, here and there. One thing when I started wrestling again after the shoulder surgery is I was like, wow, I forgot how much wrestling hurts every other part of your body. But yeah, I'm on pace. I'm getting that cardio up, getting that strength up, and I'm excited for Final X.
All right. Hey, this concludes our formal portion of the interview, but we like to play games. We have a segment for you called the Hot Box. We ask you 5 questions, hoping to make you sweat. Becca Leathers, are you ready to go into the Hot Box?
Whew, I'll see. Let's do it.
Hey, no one's turned us down, so you might as well just go on the Hot Box and see what happens. All right, question number 1. You're listed of 1 of 8 notable people on the Choctaw, Oklahoma Wikipedia page. Name at least 2 other notable people from Choctaw and what they are known for.
Oh, man. I only really know. Maybe Randy Ross is on there. He's the mayor right now. He's a really cool guy.
He's not on there, but
Dr. McCarron.
McCarron, I don't see him on here. You named two, so I'm actually going to give it to you. But the one that stood out to me was Louis L'Amour, the author. A guy named Ryan Merriman, who I'm not sure who that is.
Ryan Merriman, yes. He was in high school right around when I was in middle school.
Oh, okay. I don't even know what he would be in. It just says actor on there.
He was in, like, Luck of the Irish and something else. And he was on, I think, the... some other TV show. I can't think of the name of it right now.
But pretty cool that you're listed in the eight there. Isn't that pretty cool?
Yeah, that is really cool. I was really excited after the World Championships to see that I had my own Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
I was like, I've made it.
And now you've made it. You're one of the notable people of Choctaw. All right.
Jason Powell. Jason Powell's from Choctaw.
But he's not listed.
No, he's not.
He should be.
He's not. He's not listed.
He should be listed. That's a good one. All right. Number two, at the end of the movie Inception, does the top keep spinning or does it fall down?
It falls down.
Okay. I think so too, because it's teetering there. I'm gonna agree with you there. I'm gonna give you that as a pass there. So you got that question right. Number three, what's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning?
I listen to Up First by NPR. I get my news on.
You do, just like right away.
Every morning, second I wake up.
All right. I like that answer. We're going to give it to you. Question number four. If you could have lunch with Pink, Lady Gaga, or John Smith, who would you choose?
Oh, my gosh. How are you going to throw my three favorite people in that group? I've loved Pink from the time I was like a small kid, and I think Lady Gaga is like one of the best people in the world. I've already eaten lunch with John Smith.
Okay, so you throw him out. So you got Pink and Lady Gaga to choose from.
Oh, wow. I would have to go with Gaga.
Okay.
Can you imagine that, though? Pink, Lady Gaga, John Smith, and Becca Leathers.
Yeah, all four of you. Let's set that up. Let's set that up, and then we'll have Dan Gable actually serve you lunch. How does that sound?
Yeah, can you set that up? That'd be awesome.
We're gonna work on that. I think we have ins with John and Dan, but Gaga and Pink might be a little more difficult, but... we'll see if Andy can call in a favor. All right, final question, then you're out of the hot box. If you could be a participant on one cooking show, what cooking show would you choose?
The Great British Baking Show.
God, I didn't even
Bake
know that.
Off.
I didn't even know that was a show. So
it's awesome. It's like a bunch of like regular people, and they have to make the most, like, they have to make recipes that they don't even know what it's supposed to look like. They just have like the basic ingredients and are told to go. It's awesome.
All right. I'm giving you a bonus point. That makes up for not knowing who your famous notable people are in the first question. Congratulations. You're out of the hot box. Thanks for joining us on the mat. We're excited to see you at Final X. We wish you all the best. And let's hope that the women's national team gets a gold for the United States.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. That was Becca Leathers for Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.